Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
That was Dr. Stephen Allday.
I didn't get to hear.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, then,
any of it.
All right. This was as if this was like the $64,000 question. You were like in an isolated booth, and we were.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I have no idea of his opinion.
His opinion is that what you said is invaluable, and taking a stand, and he completely agrees that the time is right, and the level of misuse mm-hmm. now overshadows the efficacy.
The good
of
exactly.
the yeah, that, which is
know,
sad.
It started out as a wonderful drug. Now, I can tell you this, Steve, that it's, obviously anybody that knows me, I've spent a lot of time in Toronto the last 25, 30 years, and that's where I believe it started. We used it on some, I've used it before, long, long time ago, but only on horses that, had some respiratory issues. In all honesty, I probably haven't used it in 15, 20 years at any time, because I found when I did even use it for respiratory issues that I just thought the horses that I came back that I ended up bleeding. And I think maybe that's why we had the respiratory issues in the beginning. So I haven't used the drug. I really haven't used the drug probably in 20 years. And never, ever did I ever use it in the form that I'm suggesting that it's been used.
Explain, we'll circle back, but explain the timing and the motivation and what got you to sit down and write and reach out to Sue Finley and ask, to write an op-ed.
Well, I felt this way for some time, a lot of frustration. You saw me referring to what's going on in Toronto right now and them not being able to fix it because of lack of, not because of Jim Lawson or Woodbine,
sure,
but just because, there's been a lot going on with government stuff in Canada, some switching, the way they at one time, I don't even know that now they have a racing commission. They used to have a commission and with all the stuff that happened a while back, everything changed. And through this change, I don't know, they don't seem to be able to get anything done. So I was frustrated by that. I don't know. Then I did some research, and to be honest, I knew all about the muscle mass, and I knew about the, bigger, stronger horses, but I didn't realize about the bone loss. And when you sit there and you look at where our industry is today with all these breakdowns, well, that's a formula for it. And interesting enough, When the study was done, it showed a lot of issues with, if you read the study, it was done on rats, of course, not on horses, but a lot of it with their rear and rear ends. And I believe I've never seen so many type of tibia fractures that mm-hmm. we've had in recent years. As I wrote in my article, I don't know how many times we probably bought just last year. We bought, maybe 15 2-year-olds, the 2-year-old sales. We bought lots of yearlings, and you bring some of these horses home and they go from these athletes to nothing. And that's very frustrating, but I'm not going to give you that my owner, but I will say it's a he. He has been in the game for a long, long time. And he's about as good a man as you'll ever find. And he told me that he is ready to get out because of all the cheating. And that is one of the things that motivated me. probably the big motivation. I said, I cannot sit by and not say anything. And look, I feel like I've earned my stripes, and I've got a lot of knowledge. I've been doing this for a long time. Now, as I understand this morning, there's some trainers saying that I don't know anything, but you know, I stand by what I said, and I believe I'm right. So.
I've only seen how well received the piece has been.
I have to tell you, it's been unbelievable. I heard from Japan. I heard from Dubai. I've heard from England. I've heard from some of the biggest names in our industry already last night and this morning. So, it's been unbelievable, the response that I've gotten for it, from it.
And, you know, I had expected originally to have you on first and then for Dr. Alday to kind of flesh out some of the mechanics involved. But actually, it works out even better because Steve, you know, kind of we explained to people what, you know, what the original use was for clenbuterol and how it has evolved, why it and the reason it went from benign and beneficial to where it's gone is directly tied to the elimination of steroids.
Absolutely. 100%. I've said that all along. Before we were using Equipoise, Winstrol, everybody, it was legal. We used it, right?
Yep.
And so everybody was kind of on the same playing field. And as soon as that was eliminated, then now you've created this huge discrepancy. I think, somebody just tweeted me, and I agree. You feel like now when you go over, you know, to run, it's like you're taking a knife to a gunfight. And that's not the way it should be. And I have no idea what Steve said. I do know that he's, you know, a very good veterinarian. He's actually been a friend of mine for probably 30 years. And if that's what he said, I agree 100%. This has really came about since they eliminated, you know, those type of anabolical steroids.
And what's
just
funny,
made a bigger, you know.
Exactly. Deal. It's the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah,
that, you know, here, and it's funny because, I'm going to tie this to Rick Dutrow and why the game, to some degree, when it came to getting rid of steroids, which we all viewed in general at the time and subsequently as a positive. I mean, and if Rick doesn't casually mention as part of, you know, a Q&A about Big Brown during the Triple Crown about him receiving Winstrol, where people said, "What is that?" Well, it's a steroid. And they're like, "Steroids?" I said, yeah, 70% of horses in training are using them, and it's been used for 40 years. I mean, it wasn't like it was some, you know, it was some secret.
Interesting enough that you should bring that up. I've gotten a lot of emails and texts and calls saying thank you. You know, most people didn't even know anything about clenbuterol or what it was doing or what it could do.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of people that are shocked and surprised by it.
Well, we heard at the height of what seemed at the time of abuse of clenbuterol, one abuse was horses literally on the walk over because it won't show up. It wouldn't show up in half an hour or 20 minutes, after the horses go to cool out and go to the test barn and getting shot, literally getting shot on the walk over. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you hadn't heard.
I've heard it, seen it.
This is it's a valuable dialogue.
I want to tell you, I read something about a week ago where, you know, they said that all the testing, you can do all the testing and
this came from the Asia, conference.
You're not going to catch them. The only way you catch them is by looking at reversal, form reversal, and doing this and that. So that got me going, and then I thought, I'm gonna say this now, and it's probably gonna upset some people, but you know, we've talked so long and so much about the out of competition testing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's no good. For one, if the drug you're testing for, so for instance, a lot of the out of competition testing only comes about 5 or 6 days out. You realize that.
Right.
Because one, we can't plan far enough to know where a horse is going to run. You know, a horse may change paths. So anyways, you go and you do this out of competition testing. Well, if he tests positive for Vanopolman, unless he tests positive for Vanopolman, on the day that he runs, it's not there. There's no, you know, there's no consequences. They haven't done anything wrong.
Right.
So, and again, I didn't get to hear what Dr. Alday said, but I think you were saying that, you know, yeah, there are some good reasons for clenbuterol, but the bad so far outweigh them that it should be banned. See, I would like to see it where your horse should never have it in them. You can take a hair sample and see if the horse has had Vanopolman in the last 6 months. The other thing that I would like to see done, and I've asked, and I don't know, but on these necropsies, I've read some of the Kentucky ones, and some admit to giving it. But it's kind of up to them to be truthful in their statements. But I think we should be testing for it and knowing if it exists, and if it does exist, how far out. That'll tell us a lot more of how badly it's damaging our industry. But if you put one and two together and get three, it makes sense.
That was one of the things I read in the piece that I thought was a corollary that goes beyond, you know, just the, you know, the simple abuse of the product and the potential, obviously, to injure a horse, to, you know, to sap a horse in several different ways. I mean, the side effects of withdrawal, and you know, your whole point about the cycling that's involved. Well, the corollary is that it's reducing starts and it's hurting the product across the entire sport. If a horse is cycling like this and is only running 4 or 5 times a year because they're abusing it, you're taking probably an average of 4 or 5 starts a year, you know, out of circulation that, you know, basically benefits everybody. It benefits the bettors. It benefits handle. It benefits, comes right back to the horsemen, actually, in terms of, if it helps handle, it helps horsemen and owners. So this is a vicious cycle in 9 different directions.
I just want to say something because something was said this morning, and I didn't, just because you're winning, I'm not accusing you of cheating. I don't know if you read the article and you came up with that, I'm sorry, but I'm not out here saying just because you're winning, you're cheating. I did you read that in the article?
No, not at all.
No. There's a lot of great horsemen and women out there that are winning every day without cheating, you know. And I found that a little disturbing because I was not suggesting for by any means.
You actually went out of your way. You went out of your way to say that the misuse of clenbuterol can be within the rules.
Yes.
And that's where the frustration lies, right? Yes. I don't know.
Steve,
I guess people are walking a line somehow that way.
To me, if you truly care about the welfare of your horse, right? And we know there's lots and lots of owners that are out there and trainers that feel that way. And then there's some that only care about one thing, and that's winning.
Yeah.
But if you are willing to subject your horse to this type of treatment, you don't need to be in our business.
That's about as well.
I don't know if it can get any simpler than that.
No, exactly. That's exactly right.
If you are willing to subject our athletes to this type of treatment, then go do something else, please.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect, Mark. That's the message to convey. You're right. 100% right.
You know what, Steve? I've been doing this 40 years, and you'll have a tough time finding anybody that loves this game more than me. My father loved it like me before me. Yeah. My son, as you see, Norman, who's doing a tremendous job, loves it like me. It's now at my point in life. I've accomplished most of the things I want to accomplish. Now it's taking care of my sport. And that's because I owe that to this sport, because when you look around me, I've been so fortunate. I have many great things, and I owe it all to this sport. And I'm just trying to protect it and give back. It's not about me, you know, going forward. It's more of me now about protecting our sport.
There's no follow-up question necessary. We'll save it for after you win some this weekend. You got a bunch of stake runners, so I'm pretty confident we're going to end up talking next Monday or Tuesday. But Mark, everybody appreciates the sincerity and the earnestness of what you said, what you wrote, and the way you act. As I've said many times, your roster of owners speaks volumes on that, on all those fronts.
Well, I appreciate it, Steve.
Mark Cassie, if you haven't seen the piece yet in TDN, please read it and support the message. And it feels like this will be one of those, one of those initiatives that gets balls
I would
rolling.
Like just to, Steve?
Yeah, yeah.
Steve? I'd just like to thank everybody for their great responses, okay?
You got it. You got it, Mark.
You have a great
day. I'll talk soon. Mark Cassie. And, I'm not going to start asking about Untitled and Get Stormy and the rest. We'll talk about those after he wins a couple of stakes this weekend. Got to applaud Mark for what he just said, what he wrote, and the way he conducts himself in the game. We'll take a break here, just past the bottom of the hour. Got a visit coming up with Jeremy Plonk. Countdown to the Crown. We'll get his Fountain of Youth recap and start to look ahead to the fields in the 3 point races on Saturday. Gotham, San Felipe, Tampa Bay Derby, 50, 20, 10, and 5 for each. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Back at the races, certainly a black and white presentation there by Mark Cassie, and before that, Dr. Stephen Allday. We'll go back onto the oval and talk a little countdown to the crown the rest of the morning, about 25 minutes. Jeremy Plonk joins us, and horse player now, as we count down. And a big weekend ahead, but we can't look ahead without looking back. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You know, it's appropriate you have Mark Cassie on. He's won the last two Triple Crown races, of course, last year with the Preakness and the Belmont, War of Will, and Sir Winston. And, you know, he's really got that only one jewel left for him in his career, really, and that would be a Kentucky Derby. And maybe Enforceable will be his horse this year. He's got as good shot as any right now. And with kind of some of the defections that we've seen on the trail in recent weeks, and Mr. Monomoy going to the sidelines, and you know, Dennis's Moment throwing in the towel on Saturday in the Fountain of Youth. You know, horses like Enforceable, who look like good, you know, bottom of the upper tier kind of horses for the three-year-old division, might be moving more and more forward.
Well, and we've got quite a few this weekend. You know, the ones that have already created some notoriety and have got some stripes, and obviously the West Coast race, the San Felipe has the most star power when we talk about the two-year-old champion and you know, a double stake winner in Thousand Words. I mean, there aren't that many you know, route going, you know, two route graded stake winners out there right yet, but Authentic you know, takes the next logical step. Honor AP, who, knowing Sheriffs and John White, talked about, you know, the the kind of preparation where this is not the end goal, obviously. And even the Santa Anita Derby might not be the end goal. You know, certainly go back to the way Giacomo was handled. It was a building blocks scenario. Then we've got what happened in Florida, and let's fold that in. We'll talk about the Tampa Bay Derby probably first, and we can get your fountain of youth thoughts and use Chancet's defection at the last minute as the linchpin to tying both coasts of Florida together.
Well, it was a real key to the race. I mean, because he was outside drawn speed, and what we saw with the eventual winner was he was outside drawn speed. So you take one of those other horses who would have been fighting for position going into the first turn or who may have pressed the tempo a little bit quicker, and it certainly made the trip for the winner at the Indian somewhat easier, but it's never easy to win from the 10 hole like he did, go 46 and change to the half. And I looked at the track data, and if you trust that, the fourth quarter of the race, the fastest fourth quarter was the winner, and the fastest final 16th was the winner in Country Grammar, sharing the fastest time. So nobody ran faster late in the race, and he won it in the first half mile. So he kind of just from start to finish owned the thing and, you know, made Barclay's horse look a little bit better, I think. That Tis the Law handled at the Indian, not easily, but handled him, I thought, pretty handily in the race at the Holy Bull. So what did we learn from the Fountain of Youth? I think we learned that the Florida still runs through Tis the Law if he's healthy and good, and he's back training now. So I think that was one of the big lessons learned there. And, geez, what to make of the performance of Dennis's Moment? You know, he's had three of these now. You know, he's run five times in his career, and he dumped the jock and clipped heels in the first race. He stumbled at the start and basically a DNF in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, trotting around the back the whole way, and essentially ran a similar kind of race. He was shuffled into the first turn by, as seen on TV, not noted in the short comments for the running line, which I think is a mistake because that was really the key to the race, was he was shuffled going into the first turn, and then the horse just threw in the towel. And he's done that now a couple different times, and you start to wonder about the mental processes for that horse. You know, you can't project and pretend to know what's in a horse's mind, but this horse has had a lot of trauma in his starts, and when things go bad, they seem to really go bad for him. And one of the tip-offs to that, I thought, was how great he looked all winter working solo. And then Dale put him in company on February 15th, and I watched the workout at XBTV, and he was in company with an allowance horse for Romans, and that horse was going fast in front of him, and he just kind of stopped trying to go after him. And then even in the gallop out where you think, okay, well, they both went 58 and change, so the workout looks really fast on paper and good, you expect Dennis's Moment to blow by him in the gallop out and run about another half mile past the wire and be hard to pull up on the backstretch. He never really even went by the allowance horse in the gallop out at all. So when things don't go right for him, that horse just doesn't give effort. And if there's not something physically wrong with him, which there must not be because Dale had him back on the track this morning, according to Mike Welsh, then it's mental. And what to make of a horse who's got some mental fragility to him going towards the Kentucky Derby, the race that probably demands the most mental stability out of any racehorse you'll see. I mean, you know, about an hour before the race, you're walking around and pacing in front of all those people in the chute before the walkover and all the hubbub that goes with it, much less you can't expect to get a dream trip in the Derby. So, boy, I don't know. With Dennis's Moment, you're not even back to the drawing board with him. You're trying to kind of get an assessment first and then back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and we had, discussing, you know, that what they're monitoring, and at the same time, Dale also acknowledged we came up with what, three or four examples of horses that have run too bad to be believed, along the trail and then righted the ship, and in fact Dale himself has had some, cited Shackleford, who got beat 20 lengths in the Fountain of Youth and ended up winning the Preakness and was fourth in the Derby.
Yeah, the Fleet Alex's race in the Rebel was probably the biggest example, I think, in the time I've been doing, the 15 years I've been doing Countdown, that, the Rebel, that Rebel performance was one of the more odd ones, you know, and then that was really the year before we did Countdown, actually, in 2005, and you know, that performance is one of the real head-scratchers. Remember, I like to, when I was on the notes team for Churchill and going around and doing the different horses I have for the notes team, I would always talk to trainers from different circuits around the country and ask them about horses from their circuit to get a sense, you know, like scouting, you know, hey, what'd you see in your division, that sort of thing. And I remember talking to Steve Asmussen about the performance of a Fleet Alex, and I mean, he just had like this puzzlement, you know, just like, how did he run that bad and then come back and run so well in the Arkansas Derby? And of course, we know how great of a horse a Fleet Alex really was. So yes, it does happen, but it's happened three times with this horse now where he's had traumatically bad experiences in horse races. It went really well for him at Ellis Park when he won by 19. I mean, is he just wound to where when everything goes right for him and he's absolutely the best horse that all of his talent shines through? I'm not sure. I mean, but, you know, I'd be curious to see what Dale does with him work-wise. Is he going to work him in company a bunch and see if it's a competitive issue? Is he going to work, you know, solo? And he looks great running against the wind. He looked fabulous all winter. But again, that one time you put him in company, that was the one time, and I wrote about it in the Buzz Report in our video analysis and said, you know, that's what makes this horse not a single. I picked him on top, but the fact that if one thing goes wrong for him in this race, I have no idea how he's going to react. And that's exactly what happened. He got shuffled around a tiny bit. It was really similar. Brian Spencer pointed this out in our Monday podcast. It was similar to what happened to Anno Dor in the Arisen Star division. He got shuffled just a tiny bit. The 11 horse came down on him a little bit in that race, and he got shuffled a little bit, and then he was just done, you know. And so if that's all it's going to take to throw a horse completely off his game at that level, then he's not really at that level, you know. He's not really an A-plus Derby contender if a little bit of bump throws you completely off. We'll have to see. I mean, I'm a fan of Dale. I'm a fan of the horse. I mean, you know, I picked him number three in the fantasy draft, and he was number three in my countdown to the crown rankings. Even though I thought something could go wrong and he might run bad, I still picked him on top in the race. So I'm a fan of the horse, but I just can't endorse what I've seen so far now.
Sure.
In five races from him.
No, just going to leave Dale alone, let him work on him, and you know, rebuild him, you know, try to rebuild his confidence. That, you know, that can happen. It can happen with the horses that lose their air until they know that, you know, after they've had, you know, they've had, in fact, Dale cited, who was it that he, was it Brody's Cause? He I forget who it was he mentioned about, somebody else yesterday had an airway. Wasn't with Tommy Bush, was it? I can't remember. It's all a blur to me after 2 days. But you know, sometimes you have to just go back a little bit to the drawing board and back up with them. You know, you hear Baffert talk about this sometimes, and look at Pletcher. Look what he's done with this Sombaye, who, you know, looked to be a precocious talent, and then, you know, kind of fishtailed around a little bit. Now he's refashioned him, you know, into a turf miler.
And Dennis's Moment could turn out to be the 2021 Breeders' Cup Classic winner at four. I'm just saying in terms of the Derby.
He's got one race to get
it right now, right? I mean, is it going to be the Bluegrass? I would guess. I mean, I don't know. You talked today. I don't know if he gave a race tip, but I would assume the Bluegrass, it gives him an extra week to figure out things. And Keeneland, you know, he always supports that race so well. You can use the excuse that maybe he didn't handle the track at Gulfstream for the Florida Derby, so you go try something different and try to, you know, perk him up. A lot of times, you know, the old Sea Hero move from Mac Miller. Sometimes horses just perk up when they come north, you know. They don't really like being in the south and in the humidity over the course of the winter. They come north and they just wake up when they get back to Kentucky. So, you know, I mean, but you got one shot with him, you know, and what do we have until that race? Two works, probably, because he probably won't work for 10 days after the race. So you're probably going to get two works between now and the Bluegrass, or now and the Florida Derby. And, like, one of them's probably going to be an easy work. One of them's probably going to be a tough work. Will that tough work be in company with a horse of similar ability? How does he look against him? Or will he just give him two, you know, breezes against the air? It's going to be curious to see. I mean, and that's why Dale is, you know, one of the top 20 trainers in the game. And, you know, he's a Preakness winner, Dale Romans, I like to call him when I see him in person. You know, he's won the big one. So, you know, I trust the decisions that he'll make. I just don't know if he's got enough time and if the horse will cooperate. That's the calendar never forgives in this game when it comes to the Triple Crown. It's fine for creating a great career for a horse. You know, you can set a calendar and say, you know, I want to get to this point eventually, but that calendar is so unforgiving on the first Saturday in May every single year. You got one day in your life to be good.
Well, let's talk about the one day where certain horses are going to have to be good if they're going to want to move along on the Triple Crown Trail. Let's go to Tampa and discuss the group that came together. And this was a field that really changed and morphed completely with Independence Hall waiting for the Florida Derby and Chance It making the shift over. We're still waiting for the final decision from Todd Pletcher about the trio that he's considering, Texas Swing, Palm Springs, and Market Analysis. Any and all could possibly go. Could be two or three. And then the rest of the field, you got the Paravine Wilkes players, Let Me Know and Violent City. Relentless Dancer and Momosa from Maker and Spa City. And I made a reference earlier today. Kieran McLaughlin, word coming that Kieran's going to at sometime very soon apparently wind down the training operation. So Spa City is the this year's edition, and it's funny because the Gotham we'll talk about in a minute, but Kieran won the last two Gothams.
Well, Spa City is a horse I have a lot of respect for. I loved his Mile and an Eighth win. I thought it was good. It was the best route maiden winner we've seen this year on the Triple Crown Trail. It was a really good effort. He's got a really good pedigree. His dam Sarah Louise was a real runner. There is a lot to like about Spa City. At a mile and a 16th at Tampa on a track that you know will be souped up. They will be running track records left and right. It happens every big day at Tampa Bay Downs. He may not be the brilliant horse for a mile and a 16th to win that, but I think, you know, coming off the maiden race, this is a great next step. And one thing we know about the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, horses coming out of the Tampa Bay Derby and out of the Tampa Prep Series have done extremely well. The timing works great. I don't know, if it's got anything to do with footing, because it even went back to the poly track era. But the Tampa to Bluegrass connection has been superb over the years. I would think Spa City would be set up to be a very, very dangerous horse in the Bluegrass. It's Kieran's hometown. Back to the mile and an eighth, which he won his maiden at. I would think the more brilliant turn of foot kind of horses may have the edge in the Tampa Bay Derby, but I think Spa City is a horse who's going to really run a good race. You know, top three or four, hit the board, look good, and move forward to the next one. I think he's a horse moving the right direction. And, you know, he's a top five horse for me, really, right now. And amongst all the other major stakes players, I think Spa City is really a legitimate horse on this year's trail. And I'm sorry to hear, but I mean, that this could be towards the end of the run for Kieran McLaughlin. But, if that's what he wants to do personally, then it's not. Not something you should be sorry about. You should be happy for him. This could be a last call for him, and what a great story that would be in a sport that needs some great stories. So Spa City's a big contender. I would think, that Sol Volante from Off the Pace has that really good miler's turn of foot, a little more brilliant than Spa City. And then, of course, Todd's horse, I think if he runs, Market Analysis, I think, is the strongest of those three that you're mentioning as contenders. I think Market Analysis would be a major contender, and Todd's done really well with his horses at Tampa, and man, has he done well this year with his three-year-olds, all late bloomers. We talked about this, I want to say, even going back 2 years ago now on your show and last year, and now it's really becoming obvious that his MO has changed to getting these horses to the races a little bit later. He's won 15 three-year-old colt maiden special or allowance races in 2020 already. I looked at the BetMix database the other day on that. 15. I mean, they've only been 60 days in the year, right? I mean, January and February, and half of those weren't racing days. And he's won 15 in the division for maiden specials and allowance just with the three-year-old colts. But I think Market Analysis might be his best of that 15 group that will be stepping up into the stakes ranks soon enough. I would consider him certainly dangerous. And then, of course, Chance It is probably best in a mile and a 16th, maybe distance-wise. He would certainly be the horse, I think, to beat in the Tampa Bay Derby with his speed. But I think the best Derby prospect out of that whole group would be Spa City and then Market Analysis.
Well, Patrick B. and Cohn in position to secure a second starter in Derby. Quite a story.
Yeah, just to comment on that. I'm a little uneasy about getting excited about Patrick B. and Cohn, just to be honest. You just had Mark Cathy on talking about, the integrity of the game and what we need to do. And, you know, we don't want to, like, cast aspersions on people in the shadows and say, well, I think this guy's a cheater, and I think this guy has been nefarious, so therefore I'm not going to like him. That's a dangerous role to get in for the media. But when you have somebody who has already been convicted of wrongdoing and of cheating and who's been banned from the game and is back, I'm not ready to get in the cheerleading squad for Patrick Biancone. I know back in like 2000, 2003, he was really rolling. I was part of all the broadcast teams and the researchers. We went to his barn like every single week because he had why and horses like that. He was in all those two-year-old shows we did back in the day, and everybody loved him because he was fun. He had the, you know, the accent, and you know, he smoke a cigarette around the barn and tell jokes and whatever. But I'm not ready to, like, forgive him, you know. I'm just not. And so the media puff piece is on it. But imagine when we get to the Derby and he has two of the favorites. What's NBC going to do? They're going to have to cover it. So now the mainstream public looks at Patrick Biancone and says, a guy with a cobra venom violation is allowed to treat horses again, and now he's got two of the favorites for the Kentucky Derby? That puts us all in a very awkward situation. I don't want to cheerlead for it. So I respect his horses. Etay Indian ran a really good race on Saturday. Sol Vellante may win the Tampa Bay Derby, but I'm not going to write any features on him.
Understood. I get it. The San Felipe, because the Gotham, we'll hit on the Gotham quickly, but if we have time, but it really does feel like a race dominated by, you know, the horses that are going to stick to 7/8 and one turn miles and middle distance. Let's get your San Felipe thoughts, because this is a heavyweight battle. I don't care if there's only five go postward, or even four. I mean, when you've got Authentic and Honor AP, Storm the Court, and Thousand Words, you've got four serious 3-year-olds.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the race of the season so far. I mean, there have been other races that have more depth, you know, the Risen Star with the two divisions and everything like that. But when you talk about high end, I think you're looking at four potential top 10 type horses right now. Honor AP is more projection. I get that, but I am one of those people projecting him as being one of the ones. His fall maiden special weight win last year was really sensational. And it's funny, you mentioned Giacomo earlier in the discussion with John Sheriff. And, you know, people think Giacomo was just a plotter and, you know, ran third or fourth in all the preps. But his maiden win by, I believe, 8 or 10 lengths at Santa Anita in the fall going two turns was one of those sensational, holy cow, this is a really good horse. And what happened was is that he kept running like third and fourth, and everybody just, like, he lost 10% of his fan base every time he ran after that, you know, to the point where when he got to the Derby, everybody said, yeah, he's okay, but he can't do it. He's 50-1 and dismissed, you know. But that talent was there, and Sheriff's being so patient and not a guy who is about, let's make sure we win this prep, you know. So I think with Honor AP, the question with him is, you know, he missed the Sham. He had the little foot problem. He missed a work or two in there along the way. John's got him right now, and he's not going to be a guy who's going to lean all over him to win this race. And even if he did, he may not win this race because Authentic is really good, Thousand Words is really good, and Storm the Court seems to be training a little bit better than I thought he was going in to the San Vicente. So that's good news for his camp. A good effort might get you third in this race, but I would think by the Santa Anita Derby, an improving effort by Honor AP, he's kind of like one of those horses like Spa City. I don't necessarily expect him to win this weekend, but I think by Derby Day, he's definitely in my superfecta. If things progress the way I think they could. And I think Honor AP has a ton of talent, and I think he's going to be one of the ones. He may get beat this weekend. He probably will get beat this weekend. One of the favorites will probably take it. If you're watching the workouts at XBTV, which I recommend everybody does, you know, you're never going to be dazzled by Thousand Words. So don't watch his works and say, oh my God, bet against him, because he's looked bad going into almost every race. Bob even admits that this isn't a good workhorse, you know. But Authentic has looked good training in the morning, and I would think Authentic to be the horse to beat. He hasn't run since the Sham right there at the beginning of the new year, but this was kind of by design. I mean, this is what he was planned to do. I would think he's going to be very tough. Authentic should be sharp on Saturday and be the horse who's, like, when you talk form cycle, you know, that maybe Thousand Words has already run a couple big ones, and he's not super-duper brilliant. Honor AP's on the comeback. You know, Storm the Court might still be another race away. When you look at the form cycle, Authentic looks like the horse who should win on Saturday based on form cycles. But they got to go out and run them.
Well, and on that particular theme, having been, you know, having been at Los Al for the Futurity, that was supposed to be High Velocity's big opportunity. Oh, it's High Velocity, High Velocity. Yeah, and Thousand Words just plugs along.
He could win. I guarantee it. He's the other. I mean, he could absolutely win that race. He's probably never going to be fully appreciated. You know.
He'll be fully appreciated by the time when we get to 7 o'clock on Saturday night, May 2nd. He may be very well appreciated
because absolutely. Yeah,
because this is.
For sure, but.
This is the type of horse that horses that run 24 second and change quarters, they've got a pretty good history in the Derby. He's wonderful, and I tell you that work yesterday, that was a workout designed to put him a little bit, you know, put a little speed into him, and I thought he looked very good. He didn't keep going around the turn, but I think that was by design. He wanted a sharp. Baffert wanted a sharp 5/8 from him. I tell you, the work. If you want to see a work that is quintessential Baffert, go to XBTV and watch Nadal's work. Where anybody that you know is being dismissive of him, we said this coming out of the. Out of his performance, he's going to take a step forward. I think he'll be very, very tough to beat at Oaklawn. Jeremy, this was great. There's tons of great information. Countdown to the Crown, Horse Player Now, and podcast action, recapping and the previews and the maidens and the allowance winners. And then, of course, the weekend preview on Friday. Take full advantage. Horse Player Now on Twitter and online. Jeremy puts in a huge effort. This was a pretty intense 3 hours, and I want to thank Jeremy, of course, and John White from earlier, Andy Serling, and the hour we spent with, more than an hour, with Dr. Alday and Mark Cassie. Time well spent. If you missed it, replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Podcast up in a little bit. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.